Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Welcome to our 12 Traditions Workshop. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet AA Tradition, How It Developed by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that purpose. That is why we're here. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We're here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. A reminder that the new flyers for the STEP workshop beginning in January are on the table. There's plenty, so take them if you are so inclined. Many of you know that I lead and facilitate meditation groups on contemplative practice called centering prayer. It was originated by a Trappist monk, Thomas Keating, and a documentary film on Thomas is being shown on Saturday the 15th. Saturday the 15th at 7:30 here in Santa Monica. And I don't have all the details, but there's a one-page flyer that has the website if you're interested in seeing that documentary. I think there are like only 50 seats available, so they're expecting a small gathering. And I have no idea whether they're actually sold out at this point. I will be going. It's the only one showing, I believe, at least at this time, Saturday the 15th. And there's a flyer on the table if you're interested. There's also a flyer that was distributed by a group in Sherman Oaks. They've brought in a speaker from Nashville who I've heard his CDs. I like his information and his pitch, Scott L. And that's on November 15th also. That's from 11 to 5, so you could have a full day of it. But anyway, those flyers are on the table also. I'm just supporting things that support us as I at least see it. This is the first announcement. I'll be making it periodically, and it sounds like it's a long ways away, but it's not. It's a cruise that'll take place next October, October 18th to the 25th, and it's to the Mexican Riviera, 7-day cruise. I'll be the featured whatever attraction. there'll be other people there, it's a 12-step gathering. The whole cruise isn't dedicated to 12-step, but there will be a pocket of us, probably anywhere from 50 to 100 people. If you're interested, the flyers are on the table for the first time. I'll announce it periodically. October 18th and 20th to the 25th next year. Speaking of the contemplative practice of centering prayer, Thomas Keating, there's a two-sided handout that was handed out before. You may not have paid attention to it, and then again you may. There are a supply of them on the table if you're interested. It's a summary of his book, Open Mind, Open Heart, which is the seminal work that launched this about 40 years ago. And it's not that it's a new practice, because it's an ancient practice, probably at least 2,000 years old. And he's just put it into a current vocabulary and a current process that, for instance, the English-speaking countries can understand. All right, so much for that. I like to give a context and an orientation. Tonight we're going to be talking about the ninth tradition. The short form of the ninth tradition is AA, as such, ought never be organized. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they served. Then the long form. It's a little long, but it has lots of meat in it. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office in New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. Totally countercultural. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. And then a wonderful phrase here that goes throughout the literature on step nine, tradition nine. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. Universal respect. And so once again, we see the tradition's theme right from the beginning, the purpose of the traditions themselves, and clearly the purpose, the single purpose of the first tradition was unity. And each then tradition is to support one facet of that survival through unity. The steps are like working out the body to get in shape for the sport or the game. The traditions are the guidelines of the game, how to play the game. The steps squeeze self out of the individual. The traditions squeeze individuality out of the groups. If I don't apply the steps, I'll get drunk. If we don't apply the traditions, we'll all get drunk. The steps integrate us as individuals on the basis of the dependence on God. The traditions integrate us with each other in the group with the dependence on our fellowship and our community. Underneath each step is powerlessness, God reliance. Underneath each tradition is humility, group reliance through group conscience. The whole total service structure of AA, General Service and all of the other service structures, as you see the organizational structure, I'll try to get a outline of that from the central office for the next time we get together, is to support carrying the message. That's the whole purpose of the structure. So is it carrying the message, or is it doing the work that supports carrying the message? See, that goes right back to what we looked at in terms of self-supporting also, and some other concepts that we had, distinguishing what is service and what is a career. It's clearly not to, the structure is not a control structure or an authority structure. It's a service structure, totally countercultural, meaning that business, both profit and nonprofit businesses, do not run that way. They have control, they have organization, they have authority, they have hierarchy. Alcoholics Anonymous does not have control, authority, or hierarchy. Alcoholics Anonymous is run by the inmates. Yeah, all the members, right? Rather than the primary principles of wealth and authority, it's really about love and service. Those were the two key words that Bob Smith used in his final talk to a conference in 1950. The two simple principles, love and service. I have more on that later on. I really like the term that came out in the readings, divine order. And when we think about the original analogy that was proposed to kind of understand the traditions as a principle of unity, we talked about the individual connected to all the other individuals in the group, the groups connected to all the other groups, the regions connected to all the other regions, the countries connected to all the other countries, and it's like one body with different functions. And yet there's a life force underneath that, that anima, the soul, the life force animation that gives it a sense of direction, and that's the higher power, the God concept, the spirit concept, that organizing principle for divine order. So one of the questions that came to me as I was doing the preparation and reviewing and reflecting on this work and commentaries on it, it says, do I control or do I make suggestions? Do I attempt to manipulate, or am I trying to be helpful? It's a rhetorical question, but it's a question that confronts me and my style and my personality. And you can tell whether you're actually one or the other by the looks on other people's faces, right? Yeah, exactly. And the reactions that you get. It's not because they're jerks. It's highly likely it's because I was a jerk. Right. The first 9 steps give us peace with our past, a sense of wholeness, oneness. The first 9 traditions deliver us to a sense of unity, from the bondage of our poor relationships with others to a sense of divine order with and about all. I came across a commentary which I have been tracking all along with each of the steps. It was produced some time ago, there's no date on it, by a person named Dennis F. The commentaries are quite good. I've not taken time to quote from them because I've just felt they've supported most of what we've been talking about. But this time I'm going to read a couple paragraphs because I think it's worthy of reading. Let us recap, because it recaps these first 9 traditions now. Let us recap our growth in carrying out the first 9 traditions in all our relationships. Tradition 1 taught me not to be a loner. I couldn't survive sober if I did. Tradition 2 taught me that sanity is seeing God as a loving God. Sanity is seeing you as trustworthy, and sanity is seeing myself as a trusted servant. A new relationship with God, a new relationship with myself, a new relationship with other people. That's the model that we've used for the steps. That's the model that we use in all spirituality. I gave up being hostile to groups. I had to trust the group conscience to survive. Tradition 3 taught me that to get along in my life, the only requirement I had to meet was a desire to stay sober. I had to surrender all other demands on God and others to be happy. Tradition 4 taught me to seek God's approval and to consult others about decisions affecting them. I gave up people-pleasing. Well, at least I have the intention of giving up people-pleasing, huh? Yeah. I mean, underneath everything is powerlessness. Can we really do these things? No, but we can in prayer and with some information and with some accountability. Tradition 5 introduced me to my primary purpose in life. Service to the sick and suffering alcoholic is my bond of love with humanity. The sixth tradition taught me to avoid detours from my primary purpose, brought about by my pursuit of money, property, prestige. The seventh tradition taught me to be spiritually self-supporting. Instead, with God and my financial needs would be taken care of. The eighth tradition taught me that, centered in God, I could have the zeal of a dedicated amateur in carrying the message. We talked about zeal the last time, that fire that burns deep, a passion that comes organically to us because of the transformation that's wrought not by us, but to us also. And the ninth tradition assures me that once my ninth step amends have been made, I will be led to that profound place of peace I have always sought in my life, divine order. The ninth tradition not only contains the secret of divine order, but also contains the personal principle that will keep an alcoholic like me in divine order. It is so simple. I give up control. Actually, I put a note in here. I give up the delusion of control. Because we never have control. Never. Over ourselves or anybody else. I've quit using the word control. Mostly, I like the word manage. I attempt to manage my emotions. I attempt to manage my behavior, not control it. I stopped trying to organize God into my limited ideas of order. I hope you're finding this good summary and helpful. I'll talk about it again. I don't know where I found it. Things come to me, right? Suffering led me to make a decision to work a discipline program so my life would improve. And I looked up the word discipline. It means to be a disciple, to find a value and to follow it. It doesn't mean getting whipped, right? I mean, that's an image that you have with the discipline. Think of the sea ships of the 18th century. They used a cat of nine tails to discipline the sailors, all right? That's not what we're talking about here. There's one other comment here that I want to read. Well, maybe not. Okay. So this comes from, and you could Google it, I haven't yet, Dennis F. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's about the preparing the for the traditions. All right. So I may have some additional comments here. To live guided by intuition rather than fear-based rigidity and control. We find the flow and we go with the flow. See, that's that whole step concept also. But under the traditions, if we're looking at the body that's all connected and we're all diverse and all different, but we're all connected underneath with this animating principle, that's the flow. That's the life force. And it allows me then to be spontaneous, to accept my mistakes and live undefended and flexible. Suffering is a stimulus to find alternative behavior that reduces or avoids suffering. I looked up the word, I did a lot of dictionary work this weekend. I looked up the word discipline, and it talks about an ordered way of life. It comes from the inside, not from the outside. I was a monk for 7 years. I had the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And I left after 7 years because I was breaking those vows. That was supposed to get a laugh. Anyway. So it was only after I found the way of life that is revealed through doing the steps that there was an internal reorganization, and that then the principles grew organically in me and then through me to my behavior. They were no longer the traditional church that imposed its regulations, or society that imposed its rules, or people that imposed their expectations, all of which I had dealt with defiantly. There's one or two of you in this room just like that. And yet, when I did the steps, there was a transformation inside, way beyond my ability to manage and produce it, that created this organic change where I had identified values and principles inside of me, which then progressively over time I have been able to live by in the flow of the universe. Okay. So, please, what's your hand? Name?
Katie.
Hi, Katie. Oh, you know, I love that. Oh, she said, discipline is remembering what you love, because it completely correlates with that sense of value. And I use that primarily in my discussions around meditation. Everybody thinks meditation is important. Everybody knows it's step 11. Everybody knows that all spiritual people meditate, and everybody wants to be spiritual, and very few people meditate. Well, they don't have time, don't you know? Well, yeah, because it's not a value. So I try to help people sort out from the internal parts, what's the value of meditation? It might be biological, lack of stress. It might be emotional, harmony and peace. Or it might be theological, a relationship with the Spirit. And they're all valid reasons to meditate. And they all do work. Absolutely. Just read the literature, research on meditation and mindfulness in any variety of practices. Biology improves, psychology improves, and your spiritual life improves. A sense of value, context, and meaning. Absolutely. But why don't people do it? Because they haven't internalized that as a value and believe it. And because they don't do that, they don't experience it. Because once you see and learn and then think it might be applicable, it won't become a value until, in fact, you try it and then experience it and see it as a value. I can show you a picture of ice cream. I can describe ice cream. I can show you an ice cream cone. I could eat it in front of you and demonstrate how delicious it is. But you still won't know what ice cream tastes like until you taste it. Then buy shares in Häagen-Dazs. All right, so let's take a look then at Tradition 9 in Language of the Heart, the comments commentary that Bill made from the grapevine in August of 1948 on page 88. And by the way, we have more of the supply of the Language of the Heart if you don't have one and you want one. And even beyond this workshop, I think it would be of value to you. Anybody have any highlights on page 88? Please, Michael. And Michael's setting the model here. We will try to use the microphone. It's not a requirement. It's a strong suggestion.
Michael, alcoholic.
Michael.
Green lights. Check, check.
Yep.
For one, I'm glad we have both conservatives and enthusiasts. They teach us much. The conservative will surely see to it that the AA movement never gets overly organized, but the promoter will continue to remind us of our terrific obligation to the newcomer and to those hundreds of thousands of alcoholics still waiting all over the world to hear of AA.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about Bill and Bob there, isn't he? The conservative Bob, all right, the ultimate Midwestern, fundamental Christian, white professional. That was Bob, very conservative. And it's often said that if Bob was the only leader of AA, AA would never have come out of Akron. It would stay there. On the other hand, the other co-founder, Bill Wilson, who we hear was a stockbroker, it's really not true. He was a flim-flam salesman is what he was. He was a stock manipulator is what he was, all right? And he was really good at this entrepreneurial stuff. And if he had been the Lone Ranger guiding AA, he would have franchised it. That's right. So it's the conservative versus the balancing. Go ahead, George.
Hi, George Barrel Alcoholic. And then it says, we shall naturally take the firm and safe middle course.
Yes.
AA has always violently resisted the idea of any general organization. And also change. Change comes very slowly in AA, possibly,
yeah,
you know, as a result of this. In fact, it said that a knee-jerk reaction in AA takes 3 years.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very slow, thoughtful, organic process because it's run by group conscience. And the true group conscience listens to even the single resistant vote. And they will just listen and listen and listen until your eyes roll back and you agree to vote right. No. That's a joke. Come on.
No, that's a plug for General Services.
Yeah, really. So absolutely necessary for effective and plentiful 12-step work, this taking the middle course and the operating principle. I liked at the top it called the universal ideal, the least possible organization. Once again, that's like a principle. And it came to me a reinforcement of some things that had come to me previously as I'm reflecting on my own personal life guiding principles. Is it the simplest solution and is it necessary? Is it the simplest solution and is it necessary? All right, so let's go over to page 89. Are there highlights on that page anybody would like to comment on or question?
Hey, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
It's the last paragraph. So this is to improve and extend our vital lifelines of special service, to better carry our AA message to others, to make ourselves a finer, greater society. And then he says, and God willing. So not God willing on the other stuff, but God willing on this last one. To assure Alcoholics Anonymous a long life and perfect unity. And my reflection on that was that it acknowledges that something better may come along, but relief from alcoholism and living a sober life is what is the aim, yeah, not necessarily the longevity of AA.
Well, I mean, that was certainly Bill's attitude. I mean, he loved AA and he thought it was wonderful, a method, but he knew it wasn't a panacea, all right? He was very clear that there will be other ways for people to get sober and to have a spiritual experience, all right? But for right now, all right, this is the best we got. But as John pointed out, something may come along. It's not been my experience. Come up to the mic.
Hi, Jennifer D.
Hi, Jennifer.
The first full paragraph on 89, the first sentence, but by none of these special services has our spiritual or social activity, the great current of AA, ever been really organized or professionalized.
Yeah, the great current of AA. It goes back to that idea of the flow. Exactly. And as John pointed out, all with the purpose of carrying the message. Is it actually carrying the message, or is it preparing some structure or person to carry the message? Ultimately, it's directly carrying the message or indirectly supporting that work. Okay, how about the 12 and 12? Tradition 9 is on page 172. There's about four pages. Any highlights on page 172? Richard.
Hi, I'm Nicole Al-Anon.
Your hair's not short enough.
Today we are able to say with assurance that Alcoholics Anonymous, AA as a whole, should never be organized at all.
Yeah, should never be organized at all. And listen to this. No membership rules, no discipline, no authority, no regulations. How could you ever deal with people with those kind of operating principles? Carefully, right? Very carefully. Power to direct or govern is the essence of an organization everywhere, but not AA. And if you've ever get some time to take a serious look at the 12 concepts, you will absolutely see the brilliance of Bill Wilson. Genius absolutely at work, where he lays out organizational structure of a nonprofit spiritual organization. He gives job descriptions, methods of communication. It's way ahead of its time and absolutely brilliant. Not that the traditions and the steps aren't brilliant, but I see that there is a real practical brilliance in the 12 concepts. All right, page 173. Anybody have any highlights or comments on that page?
Nicole Al-Anon.
We've got a trend we're building here. She hates the attention.
Yeah, at the bottom of the page, you know, the General Service Office, when asked for advice, had to coin a couple sentences which still go into half the letters they write. Of course, you are at perfect liberty to handle this matter any way you please, but the majority experience in AA does seem to suggest ...
Notice, and no direction, no control, no mandate, no regulation. They say, you're quite entitled to do anything you want. There will be consequences. And this is what the majority of our experience shows. All right? But they don't tell you what to do because they know that there will be consequences. All right? The Buddhists call that karma, meaning over a long period of time, your life will manifest the chain of your actions and the consequences from those actions. It's not anything outside of you. It's you and the decisions and the actions that you take. That's why your life is what it is. I mean, that's the toughest part of doing the fourth step, isn't it? Taking 100% responsibility for the mess. Me, the mess. Rob.
Well, now you gave it away. I'm Rob. Why didn't you just call me Nicole?
Oh,
Rob, in a way. What I found kind of powerful on 173, groups have tried to expel members, but the banished have come back to sit in the meeting place saying, this is life for us. You can't keep us out.
Yeah.
So just stressing the importance, it's life and death.
Yeah.
Just like you can't, you can't keep sick people out of your emergency room, no matter how disruptive they are, if they need emergency services.
I'm a member if I say I'm a member. I mean, that's huge. That's right. All right, so let's go to page 174. George? Oh. All right, anybody 174? Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. I mean, that's the motivation for spirituality, It's not virtue. At the beginning, it's not virtue, it's suffering. And then he goes on, his drunkenness and disillusion are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They result from his personal disobedience to spiritual principles. Just what I was saying about the karma stuff. Mr. John?
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John. Turn the mic
Herb,
down.
Herb, you have mentioned several times in this meeting and I think others' workshop that the two disciplines are alcohol or it could be food, sex, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, whatever the addiction is.
Yeah, and then God.
Yeah.
And so here in the second to the last paragraph, it says, great suffering, alcohol, sex, food, whatever, and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We need no others.
Yeah. Well, I've oft quoted Bill saying, when in the context of his attempting to explain the reason for the traditions, when people were accusing him of trying to create rules, regulations, and too much bureaucracy, he said, they're not rules and regulations. They're principles that are guiding our behavior based on our experience. He said, there are only two disciplines in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not sure where that is, but I will find it. And he says, one is God and the other is alcohol. You're either going for the one or you're going for the other. And this is basically a variation on that. I mean, Bill wrote this, so that kind of contrast is deep embedded in him. And there's kind of like a poetic manifestation here where he says, after the material that I read earlier, the same stern threat applies to the group itself. Unless there is approximate conformity to AA's 12 traditions, the group too can deteriorate and die. So we of AA's do obey spiritual principles. First, because we must. And ultimately, because we love the kind of life that such obedience brings. That was the comment I made about establishing a value. And then the comment, great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We need no other. Great suffering, addiction, great love, relationship with the Spirit. Please.
I am not Nicole. I'm Katie, alcoholic. Hi. Well, the great suffering, great love, I definitely underline, but down below it says it's a difference between the spirit of vested authority and the spirit of service.
Yeah, terrific.
Two concepts which are sometimes poles apart. And it's been interesting because I started work in what seems to be an unorganized startup. And I kept saying, well, how they could do this. And there's the idea of a life or death and the idea of spirit,
yeah,
is, you know, coming from the spirit of service is truly so different than even a nonprofit trying and having a mission.
Yeah.
Because you still have people who want it their way.
Well, and they're earning their living that way.
Right. It's fascinating to see how,
yeah,
a bunch of drunks did this all over the world.
It's impossible. Workers. It, yeah, will never work.
Yeah.
It is the difference between the spirit of vested authority and the spirit of service. Two concepts which are sometimes poles apart. It is in the spirit of service that we elect the AA's group informal rotating committee, the intergroup association for the area, and the general service conferences of Alcoholics Anonymous for AA as a whole. Just as the aim of each AA member is personal sobriety, the aim of our services is to bring sobriety within the reach of all who want it. I'm going to read that again, but go ahead.
No, go ahead and read.
No, please.
I was listening to people this weekend who kept saying, but they called the police on us when we go to the meeting. They're taking us to court. They're swearing out injunctions against us. And it was all about this kind of thing. And it's frustrating. I said, you have the traditions that are being violated and so on and so forth.
Speak a little louder, please.
I would say things to them like X and Y and Z traditions are being violated. Here you need to have a group conscience. It was kind of difficult to have a group conscience when, I mean, I've seen videos of the police being called not to let somebody into the meeting. So it's kind of frustrating. People were saying, what do you do when they keep being oppositional? You see both camps trying to come to some rapprochement.
Okay.
But, you know, after I said there's this tradition and that tradition, somebody else said, let's remember that the opinions expressed here were only those of the speaker. And I'm thinking, how do you help these people who are being taken to court and having the police call on them if you don't say this far and no further? Sometimes you have to say to people.
So you really do want to control and manage an AA meeting?
Oh, it's not an AA meeting.
Or whatever the kind of meeting, 12-step meeting?
I don't go to those meetings. I'm simply speaking to people who have a bunch of questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I see. Okay, yeah.
But when they have the same question over and over again, I'm being expelled, we're not being allowed to go, we're being denied voice and vote, you want to give them some kind of...
Why don't they find someplace else to go?
Exactly. Okay, for me, looking at all this, no matter how many traditions I say there's no unity here, there's no rotation of service, what it comes down to each time is, are you looking at your part here?
Yeah.
Are you willing to let go of the obsession to correct these people?
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to say to people who are angry that somebody
called
them out.
Well, it's a hard thing to say to people who are right.
Exactly.
Well, you've heard it. I mean, you've heard it prosaically, right, around the rooms. Would you be... rather be right or happy? And I think I may have mentioned it. I heard a variation on that, which I just love. Would you rather be right or helpful? So much more takes the juice out of any type of argument, right? Do you want to be helpful? Please.
Yeah, Dave, sex, love, and fantasy addict.
Hey, Dave.
And in our fellowship, we've had some people that we've had to ban from meetings because they've been stalking
other predators.
Members.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think they're sick rather than predators.
Okay.
They just can't get beyond what's fantasy and what's real.
I was thinking more of the behavior than, in fact, the motivation, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah. That they had gotten totally obsessed over certain other members at the meeting and were... to the point where that member was getting ready to get a restraining order against
right,
that person.
Right.
Not only in the
room. So you had to set some type of boundaries as a group.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what you have to do with mental illness. That's right.
Yeah, but in the same sense, people were bringing up the ninth tradition and saying, we can't do that. And I heard that there was something...
I don't think that's the tradition. The tradition is the best interest of the whole group, and it's not in the best interest of the whole group if you allow a mentally ill person to be disruptive in the meeting, or a drunk. Drunks are welcome to come to meetings. You can drink in the meeting, just don't disrupt the meeting. It's okay if you throw up on your neighbor, just don't drink in, I mean, just don't disrupt the meeting.
And in that discussion, this letter to Irma came up, and I guess that she was an AA, an early AA, and had been what probably was 13-stepping people within those meetings, and she was supposed to be banned, and a letter was sent but never received or something like that.
Don't know anything about it. Never heard the story.
Okay.
It's a great story.
Okay. I'll see if I can find more
information. Yeah, no, it's a great story. I'm sure it's true, actually. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah, please.
I'm Mitch.
Hi, Mitch.
My concern is that you start with the assumption that those who are disruptive are mentally ill or are drunk. Sometimes they're just argumentative, like some of us. And I can argue with you all night long, and you won't be able to conduct a meeting. And I'm neither drunk nor sick.
Well. By your standards. I do, yeah. I don't want to speak academically.
Yeah.
I'm 30 years sober. I've never seen a problem in this area.
If it weren't for my sense of oppression by the crowd, there have been times when people who believe they own the meeting run it as if they did.
Yep.
I'm offended, but I don't say anything because of
Get involved with the meeting and become part of the group conscience, or find another meeting. Those are the options. You don't suffer. You become part of the solution, or you walk away from the problem. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Jean, and I am an alcoholic. I'm one of those people they tried to throw out of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah,
I am.
I know you.
Yeah. Hello. That's me. It took me getting an attorney, because the stuff that was coming around was not good, and I was standing up for other people. I was also standing up for myself, and I'm a little bit insane, and I carry guns, and I carry knives, and I scared a lot of friggin' people. Fact. But when it came right down to it, when we got the board meeting and the steering committee meeting together, and I had my attorney in there, first thing I was told to get into the damn traditions, just to know your traditions, because they can't expel you if there's too many meetings. They can get a personal restraining order against me, and whoever shows up first gets to stay at the meeting. But it came right down to the brass tacks, is that people actually allowed me to be me for the next few years, and I got to start growing. I got to start learning. I became a little more, less tolerant, a little less violent, a little more conformant to Alcoholics Anonymous. But when people backed off and quit pushing buttons for me, only then did things start to change. And that change had nothing to do with them. It had to do with me.
I'm going to stay here for just a minute, because I have a couple questions then. Because,
sure.
I mean, that's a great example. But I'm real curious as to what your perception is of how did they handle it so that you could and wanted to come back? And how did you begin to, in fact, crack open and change? Because it has to be both.
They were willing to set up a board meeting with all parties involved. What came down brass tacks, is I drug a man out of a meeting, knocked the shit out of him, and hospitalized him.
Why?
But that's not really answering my question. That's just giving us drama.
Okay. So what happened was, is the board got together with the steering committee meeting. They threw a private meeting. They invited me along. They invited his attorney and my attorney. We sat down. We had a powwow. I made my amends to him, because partially I was wrong. I will admit that.
Keep coming back.
Partially, I was wrong, you know.
And
what happened was, is at that time, after the amends were made and he took his side of the room, I took my side of the room, we really didn't communicate a whole lot. But I started getting into workshops. I started going into book studies. I started working with a sponsor at that time. And this is after 19 years of in and out in these rooms.
So they showed some reasonable response to you.
Correct.
That demonstrated some sincerity, and then you were able to just relax just enough to begin to connect to some of the principles.
I actually quit carrying guns, and that was a miracle in itself, because,
right.
I mean, I was confronted by the same person. I mean, and this whole thing came down about round a rape. That's what it was about.
Yeah.
And so I was confronted by him without the gun one day, and I just looked and I said, God, this has got to be God, because I don't do this.
Yeah.
You know, and from that moment on, things started changing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was in 1995.
But you hear the middle road there, yeah. All right? It wasn't a obstinate AA committee or group. It was a group that really wanted to help and was willing to go out of their way and spend their time in a very unusual situation.
They've seen both sides of the road.
But you were able then to sort of have some connection. So that's a wonderful story, and it just talks about this. It's got to begin someplace.
Yeah.
All right.
And one of the reasons I stick with that group, and I'm still in that group today, is I actually love this group. it. I mean, if you can survive that group, you can survive anywhere in alcohol.
Well, and if they can survive you, they can survive anybody.
That's it.
All right. That's great. No, wonderful. Any other comments on the 12 and 12? Please, Justin.
Justin, alcoholic. You know, I go to a Sunday meeting, and I love it because in the beginning of the meeting, it's always chaotic, you know, and it never seems to be going right. And I notice that when people start doing their commitments and they start going over the format, and then people start using their, you know, their passion and their heart instead of their heads, it calms down. And by the end of the meeting, everything's okay, you know, and it's all what you put into it. It's not what, you know, the craziness you bring to it.
Thank you, Justin. It's in, go ahead.
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
John.
I just had to share the story. There's a 12 and 12 study at the Marina Center, 5:30 on Tuesdays. I don't go there a lot, but I just happened to go there today. And the chapter that we were reading from the 12 and 12 was the ninth tradition. And I just I wanted to share that it seemed interesting to me that there I was in an AA meeting, disorganized about as much as it can be disorganized. It was the Marina Center, after all. And then knowing that I was going to be coming here for a very organized discussion about the ninth tradition. So I just, you know, because it was actually the 12 and 12, I thought I'd share it right now. But it was an insight, a layer of this study that there's no possible way I could get it in any other way than to have the juxtaposition of the two events.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. That's right. That's right. Wonderful.
Look who's here.
Hi, Richard.
Hi. Woo. Anyway, hi, I'm Nicole. I am an Al-Anon. So one of the coolest things I've ever seen is how Al-Anon scurry like ants when a drunk is in the room. And especially in an ACA meeting, an adult child of alcoholic meeting, we had a guy who consistently showed up to that meeting drunk. And for a while, he was just fidgety in his chair, and then he started having outbursts, and then he became confrontational, and you could see the decline in his drinking. Well, we had to confront him. We had two things working against us. We have rules that we have to adhere to based on the place where our meeting is being held. And so we did have to tell him he wasn't allowed to come back. And, you know, the one thing that at an Al-Anon meeting, especially an adult child of meeting, is we're open, but not if you're drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or disruptive anyway.
It's disruptive, but especially if there's drinking. If you're, you can't openly drink in an AA or in an Al-Anon meeting from what I've learned so far in my program.
Yeah, unless it's in your Coke can. So there are ways around that. But you're right. Right. So
I was going to say, Al-Anon is the perfect program. You can work the steps and drink.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. All right. So it's talks throughout the material in Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. It talks about obedience to necessary rules and regulations. And it says we must obey certain principles or we die. It's interesting to note that the Latin word from which obey comes from is obedere, which means to listen. So we listen for guidance and respond. And that's called obedience, all right? Because obedience has such a negative sort of implication that probably most of, at least the alcoholics in the room, would just shiver at the whole thought of obedience and conformity, all right? But it really is about listening, obedere, to listen to the spirit that guides us, and then to go along with what we hear. All right. Then got some other material here, because there was a wonderful... You hear Dr. Bob quoted, had his final talk, and you hear it quoted in meetings completely out of context. And it says, let's keep it simple. You've all heard that, I'm sure. All right? And that's the end of the phrase, right? Well, here's it in context. There are two or three things that flashed into my mind. This is Bob at his last talk at a convention. It might have been the 1950 conference. There are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind. Hear the context. He's not saying keep it simple, because it is complex. He's saying don't louse it up with psychology or Freudian concepts here, or those that are interesting to the scientific mind, perhaps some type of technology. This was written in 1984, well, before real technology developed. But have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. That's where it comes from. Love and service. Think step 11 and step 12. Love, our relationship with the mystery. 12, that compassion and altruistic helping. Love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear these two things in mind. Well, that's a big assumption. Do we really understand what love is, and do we really understand what service is? Probably takes us a lifetime to really understand that. But I thought that was worth bringing to get the context of it. He was talking about technology on the one hand and Freudian psychology on the other hand. Oh, yeah. Page 339 in Pass It On.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, the literature is so rich with that kind of history and reminders that, quite frankly, I'm going to read it all before we start the new workshop in January so that I'm back up to speed on it. So let's take a look at the, illustrated. The pamphlet illustrated, and see what's on both of those pages. Anybody have highlights on either of the pages? Won't restrict you to one or the other. On either of the pages in the ninth tradition in the pamphlet illustrated. Yes, sir.
Hi, George Brown again, alcoholic. In the first paragraph, we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. And if you actually look at the chart of the General Service Organization, it's not simple. It's kind of complicated.
Yeah. Where would I get that?
That would be in the service manual, the AA service manual.
The concepts of service? I have that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a lot of different committees and trustees and board of directors, and you look at it, and it appears to be quite complex, but that's the functional means by which AA enables the hand of AA to be there when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, to make AA available or information about AA available widely.
And that complexity, as it says here, is to organize ourselves to be able to carry the message. How else do you do what? How many tons was that?
Right.
8 tons a year of literature they put out
back time ago.
And that was in 1960 or something.
Yeah. And spiritually it remains very simple.
Yes.
The same spiritual principles.
Well, and Bill said it about the step process. He says it in his own story on page 14. Simple, but not easy.
A price has to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. Once again, that underlying anima, that underlying soul, that underlying spirit of the body that unifies us.
Nicole Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
I like this whole third paragraph. It kind of made me laugh. A non-member familiar with modern business procedures might examine the AA practice of sponsorship and see it has a haphazard operation. How about computerizing it?
Yeah, yeah.
Then an AA behind an intergroup desk might say, so you want help? First, you need the right sponsor. We have personality profiles of all our sponsors fed into our computer. We'll match you up to the best one for you if you'll just fill out this questionnaire.
Sponsormatch.com.
I was just going to say.
All right.
It's like eHarmony, but for sponsorship. Where are you going? Come back. That would be an attempt to organize AA as such.
Yeah.
Please, nobody get any ideas.
Yeah, that's right.
That, I just, yeah, hilarious.
We assume responsibility. We don't take authority. Huge difference. Spiritual simplicity, it talks about.
Katie, alcoholic, Al-Anon,
Katie.
Everything. What I really like about this, and I don't know if the words, they are suggestions. It's on the other page in the middle paragraph. They're offering suggestions based on experiences reported to the groups.
Right.
What's really nice, and actually seeing it a lot in this tradition,
yes,
is that, you know, when I speak to a sponsee or a group, all I really am giving you is experience.
That's
what worked and what didn't. It's up to you guys to make it hope or strength, in my opinion, because somebody's mistake is hope and maybe not strength.
Yeah.
But all the way through our study, we've seen the disasters and that came out of their experiences with organization or non-organization and everything.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to see that same principle.
And they're still, that's why we have the annual meeting, they're still talking about experience and refining and refining and refining. The pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed, has material. This may not be the most current edition. This is from yesteryear. Page 32 to 34 has a section on will AA ever have a personal government? And, of course, the answer is no. Sure, let's see if it had. Shall we not do well if instead we can cling in some part to the brotherly ideas of the early Franciscans? This was written, I don't know when. 1947. So he was under the spiritual guidance of a Jesuit priest. So he'd probably been exposed now to the whole Franciscan spirituality, which he got in terms of the prayer of St. Francis as an example of a meditation practice in step 11 in the 12 and 12, which he wrote in the late 40s and published in 1952. Let all of us AAs, whether we be trustees, editors, secretaries, janitors, or cooks, or just members, ever recall the unimportance of wealth and authority as compared with the vast importance of our brotherhood, love, and service.
Hi, I just wanted to note the map, the illustration on the pamphlet here. There's a world map there, and AA is worldwide, and you certainly need organization for that, you know, to support all of the offices trying to set up in other countries. Big book translated into 68 languages officially. You know, you do need organization.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Please. Oh, Stan wants us to, he wants to dump his money in the basket. All right. That's it. We got distracted from money because it's not about money, but it is about to pay the rent. So we're going to pass the basket. You know the drill. Thank you, George. All right. So now let's go to the assignments. And I'll read a little bit. Write a paragraph about, am I too organized? Define organize. How is
how organized in my life, in AA, at work, personal relationships, family, and friends, so we apply it to our personal lives. Did anybody, does anybody want to either read what they wrote or summarize what they wrote as a reflection on that? Answer to the fourth suggestion for reflection.
Nicole Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
I had so much gratitude around this because it was a huge smack in the face about organization around self. My home is total chaos right now, which is very unlike me, but I'm trying to find acceptance, and that's just the way it is right now. So I thought, that's easy. No. And then when I really started praying and looking at my life, my work is fine. I can take interruptions. That's not a problem. In group, I can let it go. That's pretty easy. But in my own life, I am so rigid, and I realize it's based out of fear. I have this utter fear of gaining the 160 pounds that I've lost back, that I have created an entire system so rigid that it affects making friends, it affects dating, it affects every area of my life. That if they don't conform to my schedule, it doesn't happen. And I thought I was much more flexible.
So, as long as you're in the ring, you get to dance. Do you have a consistent meditation practice?
Yes. I'm still new in the practice, but I do consistently pray and meditate each day.
That will change that over time. My sense of the rigidity has to come about in some sense to sort of help manage our behavior that was out of control. I'm sure that's true, but my experience with it is, personal experience, as I got connected to a consistent practice of meditation, my image is the wind of the spirit comes in and rounds off the edges, makes it softer, makes it more spontaneous, brings a sense of humor to it.
Well, great. I'm getting the sense of humor back.
So
that's
come
nice.
Back in 20 years and show us. Well, no, seriously, it doesn't happen over the weekend. Right, right. But it does happen sooner than later. All right. Both Ken Wilber, Dan Siegel, and Jack Kornfeld from all three different traditions. Jack Kornfeld, a Buddhist. Dan Siegel, a psychiatrist at UCLA. Ken Wilber, a philosopher, probably the philosopher of today, in Colorado. Three different experiences have said that over a two-year period, consistent meditation will elevate your consciousness about 20 to 40%. Yeah. And they have measurements to show that.
Well,
in their respective fields.
Since it's become more consistent, and I mean like daily.
That's what I mean by consistent.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm at 2 minutes a day,
yep.
Which I think is great.
Don't judge it. Embrace it.
And I totally do. I went up to 3 minutes. It was too much for me right
now.
So I took it back. But it's like I had to let go of trying to be this Al-Anon superstar. I don't even have 2 years of program yet.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was really humbling to take that step backwards.
Good.
I appreciate hearing what you say about just wait for it, because that's another thing, is it's like I create this rigidity and this I clamp down on myself so much that it's like it makes it really difficult to accept God's will in any of that.
Well, you can't accept God's will when you're clamped down on your own.
Right.
Please.
Mark.
You can, up to the mic if you'd like. Nice and loud then.
Nicole said that rigidity, I tend to be like
Yeah. Wait, you're talking to a room that is an expert in immediate gratification. Yeah. Yes. Anathema is delayed gratification. Anathema. Exactly. So to organize, look it up in the dictionary, it means to put into order. And when you think of the word organ, go back to what we talked about in the opening comments about the body. My body is fully organized. All the organs are in their right place, doing their right functionality. That's what organize means. I mean, my motto, of course, it drives people around me a little nuts sometimes, is everything has its place and everything in its place. And I'm meticulous about that, all right? Not so much the other people in my life, but love and tolerance is our code, right? How do you what?
How do you do with that?
How do I do? Pretty well, most of the time. When in doubt, meditate. All right, question number 5. How does my approach to organizing affect my intuition and open-mindedness? Well, we were kind of talking about that a little bit, but does anybody have any additional reflections on that?
Katie, Alcoholic Alan.
Hi, Katie.
Something that came up for me when I was thinking about this is it's changed over the years in program that I am both more flexible and creative. When my needs are fulfilled pretty well, I recognize that I can now be creative. I can give back by doing something more with what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I don't take things too seriously and don't worry about things, that's one thing. If you pray, don't worry. If you worry, don't pray. It frees me up for new thinking. And so having some things taken care of easily in practice leaves that open.
Yeah.
It's been fun to see that, oh, well, I have time. This is,
I'm not sure, but it came to mind as you were talking, the model that Maslow, the psychologist, used in terms of the triangle, and he talks about the hierarchy of needs. And you can't meditate if you're hungry. Or you need water, or you need to urinate, all right? He starts with the biology, then he goes to the psychology, then he goes to the sociology, then he goes to the emotions, then he goes to something else, and finally, at the very top, he talks about self-actualization, which is the spiritual development of the human being. But after everything else is taken care of, that's why those steps are in such wonderful order. And I believe it's why we study the steps and experience the steps first for transformation. Then we study the traditions for manifestation of the transformation. Then we study the concepts for further development. And it's all about coming up to that that top level of self-actualization. So thank you for that. So in terms of the... how does my approach to organizing affect my intuition and open-mindedness? I probably come a lot from my head, much more than I do from my heart, although I'm much better than I used to be. I need to listen to and evaluate and respond to my intuition more readily. That is to release managing and to release the control or any type of rigidity that would come around. And I know that it's part of that what I described in a very positive statement, everything has its place, everything in its place, that can be somewhat outright neurotic, all right? I'll walk by a book that I place someplace and somebody has just moved it like that, and sometimes I'll put it back in place. Other times I'll just go, leave it alone. Yeah, just learn, don't do this. You know, yeah, it's a real strain not to do, but I know that I'm dealing with my own compulsions in that area. Yeah.
consider whether I am a trusted and experienced servant of the whole. Do I endeavor to inculcate universal respect, there's the word again, for all members within all our groups? What's your consideration on that? Anybody have a consideration, reflection on that question about universal respect? Say it again. Talks about the human race. Universal respect. Yep. One of my current projects is to try to develop some language that is more universal than the language that you hear that comes sometimes from organized religion or certainly even from traditional AA or 12-step. I was at a meeting this last weekend. It was a conference. Can you imagine now? This is the first international AA conference of atheists, agnostics, and free thinkers. I had to go. How do these people do it? What's their language? What's their methodology? And I went for about 5 hours on Thursday. I went for about 3 hours on Friday, and I went on Saturday, and I stayed 15 minutes, and I went home. Now, I don't know whether you just got the progression, but I've never seen so many angry people in all my life. There were 200 people there, and whoo, you could just feel it. It was palpable. I don't remember whether it was Alan on... No, it was AA. No, it was strictly AA, and there were some people that really had the love and tolerance. You could hear it when they spoke. You could hear their body language. You could watch them. But the majority of them were just so filled with anger about the big book and the steps and spirituality and God. And I go, like, why are you so upset? I mean, you know, jeez. So where I started with is, see, these are people that have a prejudice or a resistance to some vocabulary because of some experience in their life. How do you reach them? My goal is to be more effective in the outreach. How do you reach them? Using the word universal. Rather than spiritual principles, use the word universal principles. Tom, could you hear that better than spiritual principles? I don't know. Yeah, see? But we'll tell, what? Everything with love is good, but it takes too long. Much better a bullwhip. I'm joking. He's new to the meeting. I don't want to upset you and chase you away. Yeah. See, you're in Al-Anon for sure. Well, you cut them so much slack, yeah. They've been around for a while, these people. They just haven't brought it all together, you know. When you say gathering your shit together, never mind.
Linda, Coda, and Al-Anon.
Oh, we're being recorded. I should be more careful.
Well, what this question brings up for me is the fact that, you know, I have a friend who says to me, I don't want to hear you complaining about that again. You need to pray for those people in the meeting who are screaming and irritating you. Blamed if it doesn't work.
Well, actually, prayer does work, but it doesn't change them. It changes the prayer. Yeah. So, number 7, do I consider myself a leader in my groups? Am I willing to share the leadership role, AA, at work? How about at home with the family and with friends? Much more relevant there, maybe.
My name's Rob. I'm a compulsive overeater. I did want to share about this. I had such a powerful experience reflecting on this with regard to the family. While I was doing my homework on the flight home from Dallas this afternoon, I go to any lengths to get to this to this meeting. I had an experience I didn't expect. The connections that happened were just amazing, which just drives home why it's so important. I'm here studying the traditions,
You know, I am not a leader in the family. You know, my father left us rather suddenly a number of years ago and left a pretty dysfunctional group. So I have a mother, and I have a sister, and me. And we all get along, but I don't step up. I'm not a leader. I'm not of much service, because who needs the aggravation, you know? Who needs the headaches? So I'm there if they ask for something, but I, you know, I'm kind of marginalized myself. And for some reason, I was starting to think about my step work. I happen to be on my eighth step now, going on the workshop that I've attended here. And I have an amends at some point to make to my father. I assume maybe sometime in the next year I would visit his cemetery, the gravesite, and read a letter or something. But yeah. What exactly, but what I haven't thought about is what would my amends be? What would I say? I'm sorry I wasn't a great son. I'm sorry we weren't that close. I'm sorry I didn't tell you I loved you the more. And the stuff people would put in their letter, and that's all true and sincere and important stuff. But what I never thought about is, well, how would I make amends to him moving forward? Like, what would my behavior be? And then I realized, well, this is the opportunity. Be the leader in the family. I mean, he left a family without a patriarch. And I am the patriarch now of the family. Yes. And I'm not doing my job as a not to be an authoritarian parent, but to be a loving servant, to be a loving son, a loving brother, and see where I can be more helpful. And as soon as I got that down on the paper, it was just so clear. You know, it was felt so right. The intuition was so clear. How would I have ever gotten there if I didn't study the traditions?
and have a mind and a heart and an intention of being sincere about the tradition, but open to the question as to the amends, and you're already in communication with your father. Yeah. You think that was your suggestion?
Right.
Huh? Yeah. My father said to me from the grave as I was making amends, the last line when I said, what else can I do to make it right? He said, take care of your mother. That's perfect.
There you go. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mom.
Alex, codependent.
Hi, Alex.
I was looking at that line, do I consider myself a leader? And my initial thought was, no, I'm so easygoing. But I thought of the expression that I've always kind of used is that I see myself as an alpha in Omega's clothing. Like, I'm just very, everything's so easy. But if you go against me, no, it's going to go this way. But that's the heart of that codependency is that having these strong beliefs, having these strong ideas, and having that people-pleasing. So that's where I think my growth will be coming in, is finding that leadership with kindness, with clarity, with directness, but also not that need to control either, and finding that balance.
And directness is just saying the truth, all right? Just saying the truth, but in a way that... number one, it can be heard, and number two, that it was necessary to say it. Yeah. Thank you, Alex. What is the primary principle under this tradition? Write a reflection on what the implications are for my life and behavior. And we saw from the worksheet, at least my thoughts on it, the individual and the group weakness are politics and domination. The principle of the tradition 9 is servant leadership, rotating and trusted. And the result in individual and group action is a change in attitude so that you're one of being helpful. And then in terms of the analysis on the spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice, tradition 9, we give up governing and we keep an attitude of service or helping. Anybody have any other thoughts or reflections on that? Okay. Yes? Hi, Sarah.
Thinking of the principle is that life will provide the consequences
life will provide the consequences rather than any source of punishment from me or anybody else.
Or being
over-ordered. For others? Right. What would that difference be? We're getting subtleties, I think. Yep, keeps us from disorder, and okay, it sounds to me that it's very subjective and personal. So that the word orderly, I could see, in fact, the way you said it has personal meaning to you. It has no meaning to me, the word orderly. Yeah, nice, thank you. That's good.
Hi.
Betsy.
The inspiration that I'm getting right at the moment is that given this dichotomy between being rigid and being flexible, if I adopt an attitude of being helpful to yes. myself, just helpful to myself, instead of trying to discipline myself.
Oh, I see. Yes. From that standpoint, I see that. I would want to be real careful if I made a focus on being helpful to myself.
Right, right. It wouldn't not to be indulgent, but also just to counteract that tendency to be self-willed in terms of yes. discipline and improving everything.
Yes. Once again, that middle road, the balance, the thing that probably all of us really struggle with, balance, that middle road. And one of the comments I have here in my reflections is that I really liked, and you've heard it before, but to stand for something, rarely stand against anything. Stand for something rather than against something. And I know when people were asking me about my retirement 10 years ago, it became really clear to me, people haven't really thought it through, it's when you make a change like that, don't be running away from a relationship. Don't be running away from a home. Don't be running away from a job. Get really clear as to where do you want to go and have a journey, have a destination in mind. So you're leaving a relationship, you're leaving a home, you're leaving a job because you're attracted to something else that's going to be, at least in your perception, an improvement of value. Rather than being driven away from something, like a lot of people retire because they just don't like their job, but then they are retired and they have nothing else to do. And quite frankly, the majority of people who retire are dead within 5 years. Now, it could be that some of them were medically ill anyway, and that's why they were retiring. So I'm not sure about the all of the underbelly of those of that comment. All right, so we know that there's no workshop the Tuesday of the
25th.
Thanksgiving week. Thank you. It's the 25th, so that means next week we will be meeting and we'll talk about tradition 10. And then after Thanksgiving, we'll have two more workshops on 11 and 12, which will be anonymity. Next week I'll bring another brochure on anonymity. I really do believe that those are some of the juiciest materials that we'll be talking about, traditions 11 and 12. Not to say controversial. All right. So, anybody have any comments or questions? Don't forget, if you're interested in that movie, take the thing. It says Inside LA. It doesn't have much information, but it has the website. So if you're interested, you can find it. Please. All right, we need a ride toward Beverly Hills here. If anybody's moving in that direction, and your name is? Mark would like a ride. Man with a hat. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. This we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there, and for that we are responsible. Please join me in a prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. See you here next week. Thank you.